All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers? What the fuck buddies? What the fucking ears? What the fuck nicks? What's happening? I'm Mark Maron. This is my podcast, WTF. Today on the show, I speak to director Darren Aronofsky. He directed recently Mother, but also Requiem for a Dream, the Noah movie, The Wrestler, Pi, some other movies. I'm a fan of his work. I enjoyed most of Mother. He's going to kill me. What's going on? Well, Judge Roy Moore was defeated, and that was a relief. I don't even know if you're Republican and you're hearing me say that and it aggravates you. My response to that is really, really, come on. Come on. See, I mean, you know, you can be tribal if you want to, but let's not fill the House with complete fucking dangerous lunatics. It was just a relief. You know, things are not great. And there's very little good news. And that was a big phew. Whew. Wow. That was close. That was a good feeling. And then this morning, or would have been yesterday morning, I woke up to the news that I was nominated for a SAG Award, a Screen Actors Guild Award for a Best Male Actor in a Comedy. And I got to be honest with you, folks, I didn't anticipate or expect any of this, man. And I'm very excited. I'm flattered. I'm honored. I'm humbled by the recognition by my fellow actors. And as you know, I have trouble calling myself an actor. I have trouble calling myself an artist. I don't seem to have any trouble calling myself a stand-up comic. That seems to be, you know, it's sort of like, what do you do? I'm a plumber. I know what I do. I'm a plumber. But don't you also sing at a nightclub? Yeah, but I'm not a singer. I'm a plumber. But so I'm a stand-up comic. I'm a plumber. I'm a plumber of wit. But I have been acting, obviously, and I have put a lot of work into it, and I'm thrilled for the recognition. It's all gravy to me, folks. I didn't expect any of this. I didn't expect, you know, I was looking down the barrel of no expectation whatsoever and just hoping to continue to earn a fucking living somehow without compromising myself too much to survive. Either that or suicide. Those were my options a decade ago. And this is where we're at now. And I'm excited. I seriously am just excited to be nominated. And there are some, now I have to buy things. Now I have to get a tuxedo or some sort of formal attire, a black suit. I have to go to these shows and behave properly and not, you know, be resentful or just be grateful that I'm part of such an amazing show and there's such an amazing cast. The ensemble was nominated for the SAG Awards as well. Alison Brie nominated as well. This is a great show, great writing, great cast. The stunt people, they were nominated. They do amazing work. It's just a thrill to be part of something so well received, and I couldn't have anticipated that. I really didn't anticipate any. I'm not living the life I thought I would live. The life I thought I would live was fairly diminishing. And there is still part of me deep, not that deep inside of me. Actually, it's very close to the surface that when something good happens, I take it in. I'm like, wow, that's great. I didn't think this would happen. And then it goes right to something bad's going to happen. Something's coming down the pike. Well, you know what? It's coming down the pike for everyone. Yeah. Either slowly or quickly, but you know, you don't really know. You don't know what it is or if it's an event, but yeah, you know, it's coming down the pike for all of us. So, that is in the big picture. There is an end to this. But in the micro, whatever. I'm not going to read so much into it. I'm thrilled. Thank you, Screen Actors Guild. Thank you, Jenji Cohen, Liz Flahive, and Carly Mensch. And thank you to all the amazing actresses that I'm surrounded with. Chris Lowell, actor. The whole thing. The writers. It's all them. It doesn't happen without them. None of it happens without them. I just show up and put on my funny glasses and my Sam pants. Put on your Sam pants, Maron. And that's what happens. I put on the Sam pants and the glasses. Get the hair blown out. I'm in. What else is happening? What else is happening is that my cats, Monkey, LaFonda, and Buster, are taking to the new house pretty well. It seems to be more than they anticipated. That's something we share. I don't think me or my old cats really assumed that we would ever get out of this house, the Cat Ranch, which is where I'm broadcasting from now in the hills of Highland Park. I think that we all assumed that this was it for all of us. And I think we're having the same reaction to the new house, is that they were freaked out for a few days, but now they seem more relaxed. They seem like they're all hanging out together. Buster's hanging out with the other two. But the other two seem like, all right, this is it. We did it. This is real retirement. I feel like that my cats, after being rescued from a dumpster or from an alley, from a garbagey alley in Astoria, Queens, saved from the cold back in 2004, trapped and brought into a house, my apartment, not a house, with several other of their sisters and brothers, just in a fucking clusterfuck shit show of feral cats in a two-bedroom apartment in Astoria. They managed to stay with me. Stay with me through thick and thin, through many relationships, through a lot of yelling, through a lot of sadness, through a lot of things. Monkey even went back to New York with me for a little while. He's made the trip twice. These old cats are somewhere around 13, 14 years old, and they have succeeded. No matter what happens to me, my cats, Monkey and LaFonda, have made it. They are successful cats, and they are acting like it. They are sort of like, we're good, everything's fine. We're not freaking out about nothing right now. You do what you got to do, Mark. Fix the house up, whatever. We're good. Thank you. We appreciate you facilitating this, but you're no longer necessary to us. So do what you got to do. Buster, on the other hand, it's all new to him, and he's still out of his mind. But he started fetching again yesterday, and he seems to be a little more adventurous than the other two. So my lips are chapped. My skin is dry from makeup. Okay, so I need to, before I bring Darren on, I want to say that this was the day that Buster came back. You hear live, not live, but you will hear live on tape, the return of Buster. As some of you who listen to the show regularly know, he disappeared for a few days, and he came back during this interview. Mother, Aronofsky's new movie, is now available on digital HD and comes out on Blu-ray and DVD on December 19th. This is me and Darren Aaron. Every now and then, there's a decision that's a no-brainer, and I can tell you from experience, it was a no-brainer to use Stamps.com when we started using it 11 years ago. Crazy. 11 years ago. Now, more than a decade later, Stamps.com is better than ever. The Stamps.com mobile app is like having a post office in your pocket wherever you are. You can take care of things on the go, like mailing checks, sending invoices, legal documents, and more. Easily schedule package pickups through your Stamps.com dashboard. And when you need to take care of shipping, all you need is a computer and printer. Stamps.com even sends you a free scale. Make the same no-brainer decision that over 1 million other businesses have with Stamps.com. Sign up with the promo code WTF for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. Just go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the page, and enter code WTF. Aronofsky. So now that I see you, I know we did meet a million years ago. I was always sort of not mad, but like I knew you liked comics. I knew you used Todd a couple times, so there was an element of I don't understand what do I got to do to get Darren Aronofsky to give me like two lines in a weirdo movie.
I used to go see you down on Lower East Side,
right
on Ludlow Street.
Because you're friends with Amy.
Amy, yeah, old friend, and she used to. What was the name of that night? It was like a Tuesday night.
Eating It. No. Monday night.
No, it wasn't Eating It. I thought it was Tuesday. Michael Portnoy was always there. You remember that guy?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, the guy who soy bombed the guy.
Exactly.
Emptied his Prozac pill container and stuck his dick in it. Sure.
Remember him taking all us out onto Housen one night and just streaking across Housen as a performance.
It's
pretty impressive.
Sure. I guess that type of performance, I think, has its moment, and it's necessary someone be out there on the wire doing that.
Exactly.
I don't know if there's a future in it.
Well, I actually almost gave him a part. I was trying to
give
him a couple
lines. Great. Trying to make me feel better?
Exactly.
In what?
In Mother, actually, he was putting on a little show with his girlfriend. You know, he's like a dancer, and he's...
Oh, so Portnoy's still at it?
He does some weird stuff. He did like a weird game show, like it was an installation in a space, and you walked in, and it was very intense.
I always liked the guy. You know, he was always odd, and you know, like I said, there is that element in that is necessary theatrically.
Yeah. Yes.
Someone's got to hold that space.
Yes.
I think.
I like performance art.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting.
Definitely. It's provocative. And like, yeah. So what part was he going to give him Mother?
Oh, I don't
there's
know.
Like five,
I would have stuck him in some freaky doing something crazy.
Oh, like in the corner.
Yeah, exactly.
I
would have been a shout out to you and all my comedian friends.
Oh, that would have been great. And what happened? Why didn't you?
I think we were shooting Montreal and we couldn't get him a work visa.
So tell me about it, because like, you know, they sent me a screener yesterday.
Okay.
So
did you watch it?
No, I got through most of it.
Okay.
But I'm still waiting the end.
Oh, the end's the whole thing.
Well, fuck Darren. I'm just trying to be honest with you.
Feel free.
And, you know, like, I'm in, but I didn't finish it. That's all.
That's fine.
So don't...
We can't really talk about it. The end is the best part.
Well, but it's probably better for a lot of people that we don't talk about the end.
There you go.
Right?
There you go.
The spoiler thing.
Yeah.
But let me, like, you know, I'm in it. Michelle Pfeiffer is great.
Fantastic.
Great. And like, it's so crisp. What are you doing with the color? What's going on there? How'd you jack that up like that?
Oh, it's shot on film. So maybe that's why it looks a little different. Maybe that's what you're responding to.
Man.
We shot on 16 millimeter, old school.
16?
Yeah, like the size of a postage stamp.
So that's how you got all the... So you didn't have a guy on a Steadicam. You could hold it.
He was holding the camera the whole time, yes.
Like old school holding it.
Old original, yeah. We reduced everything.
All right, so now, like, it's obviously means something that I'm not, you know, fully informed of yet.
Yes, you'll get it when you get to the end.
God damn it, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
If you're mad at me, you can say it.
No.
If you're disappointed, you say it. I mean, I'm watching it.
I'm happy to be here. I've been a fan since, what is it, the 90s.
I appreciate that, but just tell me a couple things about what compels... That like you're using a form because you've done it before, fantasy and horror, right?
Yeah,
a couple of times in your career.
Yeah.
Now there's an intention to that.
Yeah.
What does that afford you?
Well, I think it lets you start in reality and then leave it. Like one of the great things that I like about film is when it exits reality and it takes the audience with them.
Because you do that in sections in your other movies.
Yeah, yeah.
But you maintain the reality.
Yes.
Right.
I, you know, Wrestler was very, very real.
That was
very
straight
naturalistic,
up. Yeah, straight
you
up.
Know? But Requiem for a Dream, of course, has many parts that sort of drift off into this feverish place.
There is like one scene in that I can never get out of my head.
Sorry.
It's okay, but it's probably not the one you think. It's really just the of Jennifer Connelly dancing, you know, in that scene. You know, where, or I don't remember if she was dancing, but like she was high and she had to, where she was being paid, basically a prostitution scene.
Yes, yeah. Hardcore.
Well, it was hardcore because I you know, I need her to be in a different space, Jennifer Connelly. In my heart and my mind, I need Jennifer. You soiled her. You made a mess out of Jennifer.
Yikes. Sorry.
It's okay.
I make a mess out of all my actors.
Yes, she's a great actress, and it was a great movie. And like, I think you really did an honor to Hubert's business there.
Yes. Yeah. Have you met him?
No, I missed him. I have friends who met him. You know, he's sort of an oracle in the recovery racket.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of cats who I, you know, I've dealt with the second generation of the people that he was,
that
you know,
say.
Guiding through. Yeah, 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 yeah.
And he was very much a Bodhivita. He like led people to the light. That's what Ellen Burstyn called him. You know, not the Buddha, but the person that leads you to the Buddha.
Yeah, man. He was like
really helped a lot of people.
Sort of old school kind of post beatnik New York drug shit.
Yeah. And just a beautiful guy.
So getting back to fantasy and getting back to horror and getting back to leaving the reality frame. Yeah. We'll get back to Hubert, but like, so that allows you to start in reality and leave reality.
Yeah.
But it seems like with the new movie with Mother, there was a very well articulated intention. You had something set up, and it wasn't like Black Swan where, you know, shit gets weird, but you know, she's very hard on herself and it's disastrous.
Right.
But I guess my question to you is, you know, as a director and as somebody who's handled who's been at the mast of, you know, small films and huge films.
Yeah.
And this is something that came out of your mind and your heart.
Yes.
Did you have the metaphor? Did you know what you were trying to represent and what it meant?
Absolutely.
So you do that.
Yeah.
You're not one of these directors who's sort of like, hey, make of it what you will.
No. Well, I've talked a bit about it on the record, what we were going for, but it's a lot of things. And what's been the most interesting about this film and this trip is that, yeah. is all the different interpretations. And there's actually a line that comes up that the poet says that
Bardem,
Javier Bardem yeah. says, where he says everyone understands it in a different way, and he's talking about his poem, but yeah. it's actually very similar to the film.
So that was your intention.
Well, my intention was for people to get like one of three ideas out of it.
Okay.
And all three have come out.
Yeah. Well, yeah. tell me what they are.
Well, some people see an environmental metaphor where the home kind of represents our home here.
And that's something you're, you know, aligned with, right? Did you put a little of that in there?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Okay.
That's a big part of it. There's also a marriage gone wrong, falling apart.
Well, that's right.
There's the menace.
They had the menace of Virginia Woolf.
Sure.
For like, you know, an hour, it's just sort of like, oh, my God.
Yeah, I'd
almost like to see that cast do Virginia Woolf.
It would be great.
It would be great, right?
Yeah.
Okay, right. So marriage. Yeah.
Yeah. And then there's sort of this biblical thing going through, which you might have started to sense. I don't know if you did.
Which biblical thing? You know more about the Bible than me.
Well, Adam and Eve, and you just met Cain, and you just met Abel.
Right. Okay.
Cain showing up.
Okay. Yeah. Sure. Those great old stories.
Yeah. The great old stories. Yeah.
So it's all happening in front of this woman, and the crystal breaks, and that's a big problem.
Yeah.
It's a big mystical problem. It's a spiritual problem.
Yeah.
It's a creativity problem.
Yeah.
Hanging your hopes on some sort of a pennant, not always a great idea.
Yeah. Not always a great idea.
but so all those things, those layers were intended, but yet you knew that it would be like it would confound and confuse and aggravate and enliven audiences. You knew
very much. We knew we weren't making a crowd pleaser. You know, we always were like, this is punk, this is in your face. But I think it came out of a place of like rage that I was having. And it was
on all those levels, relationship, biblical, and environmental?
Yeah, in opposite direction.
Oh, yeah?
Well, actually, environmental, personal, and biblical.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, in that order.
But it takes a tremendous amount of courage to occupy that space for that long and bring people with you. They got to trust this vision.
Yeah.
So how do you know, necessarily, because I imagine that the actors read the script and none of them were like, this makes perfect sense to me.
Well, I think... there was a lot of passion from the beginning from all the actors. They were like, this is great. This is exciting. Let's explore. Jennifer got it right away. Javier, you know, had to figure out how to play that character. And as you see, it's a very complicated character.
Yeah.
It was a tight, tight rope to play this place between love and arrogance and forgetting, you know, being kind of thoughtless at times.
So
it's
hard to play. So he actually is a representative of, because I notice a lot on the relationship level and also on that this deference to the genius and you know creativity, the volatility of creativity, the fraud, the vanity, the sort of facade of it too.
Yeah, but I think that's a little bit of that's a little bit to the side.
Yeah.
There's something, he's really representing something bigger.
Yeah.
I don't want to give it away to you or to the audience.
So,
you put it together, but it's something much, much bigger.
Uh-huh. And how did you direct? Because Jennifer was pretty astounding.
Yeah.
Really. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, you're right out of the gate because, you know, she doesn't know what the fuck's going on. We don't know what the fuck is going on. But she's so visceral and so, like, you know, her emotions and her reactions are, you know, they come right through the screen. They're tangibly human.
Yeah.
And she knew exactly what she was going to do to play that.
Well, I think we discovered it.
Yeah.
And she actually, you know, we spent 3 months in rehearsal on it.
Yeah.
And went through the whole thing many, many times. And she talks about how she didn't actually find the character till the first day, which is true. I saw it happen. And it was because when we got to set, we were still struggling with what was going to be on her feet. And then we decided for her to go barefoot.
Yeah.
The second she walked through the set barefoot, it kind of connected and clicked for her. And
yeah.
This character came out. But I don't know if I've ever seen such a raw talent. Like she's autodidact. She's taught herself how to act.
Uh-huh. I remember seeing her in that hillbilly movie.
Yeah, yeah. Winter's Bomb.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, yeah. And it's just whatever she was then, 17, just incredible natural talent.
Yeah, yeah. It was like, what the fuck is this?
An incredible technical actor too. So I would give her 5-6 notes. I've usually when with most actors, you give them 2-3 notes, they can maybe handle it.
Yeah.
She'd, you know, be able to do 5-7 notes and she'd hit them all. Just bang them out. Boom. So boom, she's just. And technical, not just emotional changes, but like, oh, can you be another inch this way or that way? And so it was a pretty, it was like kind of, you know,
she's
seeing
in it.
Michael Jordan in high school type of thing.
Well, you know, I see how, like, you know, David O. Russell uses her too.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you know, I don't know what he's like, but he obviously has a similar appreciation.
Yeah.
For using whatever that energy is.
Well, I think he just took her and let her shine. Like, if you look at her in Silver Linings, that's very much
I watch that, like, every time it's on.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
And I think also Elements of Joy.
I like that movie.
What I'm proud of in this movie is that it's not Jen. And that was the first thing. She's really not herself. It's not this boisterous, strong female presence.
Right.
She's on the back foot. She's very quiet. She has a different voice. And I think she's still compelling.
Oh, no doubt.
Which to me is like what you look for in actors, like a Meryl Streep that can disappear into all these different roles. And I think Jen has just started that journey.
You think so?
Absolutely. I think she can do anything. I mean, this was the opposite of anything she's done before, this performance. And I think she's convincing through the whole film.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's been the first time where she's not really in charge.
Yeah.
Right.
Which is hard for her.
Yeah, I bet. You know, and I've seen her with accents and stuff, but, you know, still it's like there's a brassiness to it and, you know, swagger.
And also a, you know, this kind of goofy charm that she has.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Kind of like Lucille Ball.
yeah, she could do that, right?
Which I just started rewatching with my son, and he loves it. Which is also incredibly sexist. It's incredibly...
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She's like... But
Mrs. Ricky Ricardo. You forget these things that you grew up with.
But
I'd
like to remember her as usually... But she is usually he's the straight one.
Yes. She's absolutely the lead. Yeah.
Right. But like she's always screwing things up.
Yes.
Exactly. Oh, Ricky. Right. Yeah.
It's just great stuff, though.
Yeah. Are you going to, maybe you should do a Lucille Ball movie.
Good idea.
All right. So that it's very exciting. I'm very impressed with your capacity to manage these things. You seem like a grounded sort of nice guy.
Thank you.
But it seems like quite an ordeal to make the type of movies you make, specifically this new one and fucking Noah.
That was a big one.
What possessed you? It made a lot of money in the world.
It made a lot of money. It did well.
Because that came from you, right?
Yeah, that was my idea. I think a lot of like my fans didn't see it because they thought I was like selling out, and it was completely my movie. It was my passion. I've been wanting to make it for about 20 years.
Your fans from The Wrestler, Requiem for a Dream, Pie, Black Swan.
Yeah.
And the other
Fountain,
one.
The Fountain,
right.
I never saw that one, right?
I didn't see that one.
That's a good one.
I'm going to watch it, you know, okay, but I mean, I saw enough to be able to have a conversation with you.
You're doing good.
but now, because like Pi had, you know, Kabbalistic, you know, numerology, mathematics,
sacred geometry.
Right, the answer.
Yeah, yeah.
The answer. Right. You know, it's there. It's right there.
Yeah.
So that's biblical. It's Jewish.
Yeah.
Right? So Noah, one of the great Jews.
Pre-Jew. Pre-Jew. He's pre-Abraham.
Oh,
Jews didn't exist yet.
He's in the Jewish book, though.
Yes.
Yeah.
Old Testament.
So pre-Abraham.
Pre-Abraham. That's...
A guy with a boat who talked to God, God of the Jews, Yahweh. But also significant
but
other...
Before he was the God of the Jews.
Right. Yeah. Right. He was just a God.
Yeah,
right.
At that point.
Just the
he
God.
He hadn't chosen.
The one.
He hadn't made the choice yet.
But he's in other... Like, is he... He's also in other mythologies, right? Noah? He's not only in the Old Testament.
I mean, you know, there's... No, he's just in the Old Testament, but there are other flood stories. There's tons of flood stories. There's the Gilgamesh, which is the oldest mythology out there, has a flood story. So, you know, there's a lot of different sources.
But are you fascinated with that, with mythology?
I'm a storyteller, you know?
I get it.
That's my religion is stories.
And
for me, there's some reason why these stories keep getting told, because there's a lot of power to them. There's a lot of interesting elements to them. There's a lot of mystical, cool ideas that can reflect back. And I'm all about thinking about those stories and what they mean for us today.
Okay. So you wanted to tell the story of Noah.
Yeah.
Why?
Well, he's the first environmentalist.
Uh-huh.
You know, he was there. Ooh, your cat.
Did you hear something?
I did. I heard a cat. Mark's going to the door to check for the cat.
Buster?
He's searching for the cat outside.
Buster? Hey, Buster? God damn it. Buster.
No luck?
He's been gone for 2 days. It's driving me nuts. I hope he comes back. You never know out here. So the first environmentalist.
Yeah.
We'll keep an ear out. Well, he's usually like, it's high.
I heard it, I think.
Something. I heard something. Yeah, I don't know.
I definitely heard what you heard.
Yeah.
He saved the animals 2x2. And I just thought the idea of this impending doom, this apocalypse, that the world was filled with man's evil and God decided to restart it again. It's actually very timely.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Well, so you thought it would be... It's a commentary.
It's about faith in humanity.
A clarion call. Is that the word that I want?
I don't know.
What does clarion call mean?
I don't know.
Can we look it up?
Yeah,
I feel like I used it right, but this is ruining it. But you want it, you told it for the reasons that it was written.
Yeah, I don't know.
You told the story again.
Different people would say it has different
a strongly
meaning.
Expressed demand or request for action.
Clarion
call.
As in two words.
Yes.
Okay. Well, there you go.
It was that.
I guess so. Yeah. And the last film.
Yeah.
I think it's like about, I don't know, the last couple have been about screaming about what's going on. It's a very frustrating
That's
time.
That's pre-Trump. Both times.
Well, this one, Mother was written the eighth year of Obama and comes out the first year of Trump.
Right.
So that's interesting how things change and, you know. But I think actually it's just interesting how interpretations have
changed. So you see on some level that, you know, in your mind, those both operate as environmental warnings.
I think that there's elements of that in both films.
Buster. Sorry, it's very exciting.
No, it's very. It would be great if he comes back. Wouldn't it? Mark's going to the Buster? Door again.
Buster. Oh, these fucking raccoons.
It's a raccoon.
Two of them.
Do they endanger cats?
No.
Okay, good. Oh, there's
it's
a dog.
So big raccoons. They're surprisingly big. You've seen them?
Not in L.A.
Oh, they're here.
Yeah.
But when you do see them, you know, it's just sort of like, where are they during the day? Some of them are fucking huge.
Amazing.
And they have hands.
Have you ever seen a possum?
Yeah, they got them too. There's one of those around.
I never saw one until I got into college and I woke up. I saw it outside the Store 24 and I called all my friends.
Store 24.
Them out of bed. Yeah. Called them all out of bed. Made them come see this. And they're like,
it's a possum.
I thought it was the king of rats. I was like, the king of rats is outside Store 24. I made everyone go and they just made fun of me for a long time.
There's one hanging out now. Usually I get possums, raccoons, skunks.
Wow.
Light on skunks lately.
Well, that's good.
There's a couple of raccoons around. They hang out, but possums come and go. But there's a large possum around right now.
Coyotes.
Yeah, that's what the problem with the cats is.
Oh, I'm sorry.
All right, so environmental clarion calls.
Yes.
So where did you grow up?
I grew up in South Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what?
Near Coney Island, Manhattan Beach.
Oh, really? Yeah. Are your parents Russian?
No. I was there before the Russian.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. The Russians came in the 80s. My grandparents came to America. So
you were in the same place your grandparents lived at?
Basically,
you grew up with them in your life?
Definitely. Yeah. All three out of four.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That's good, right? For how long were they around?
Grandma Betty made it all the way through Requiem for a Dream.
No kidding. Yeah, Did you take her to the premiere?
I don't know if she made it that far. She, the film's dedicated to her, so she passed. But I remember her being on set the night that Marlon gets shot at in the back of the limo and goes running down the street with the blood guts, and she was just looking at me, shaking her head.
Like, what are you doing?
This is not a career.
Yeah,
you should be a doctor.
Where'd they come from? Where'd she come from?
She's from Lithuania.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
And, well, that's sweet, you know, that they were all there. How many siblings do you have?
I've got an older sister, Patty.
Yeah? Is she in the arts?
She's a producer for CBS News.
Oh. Yeah. Well, that's good.
Yeah.
So and your folks did what?
Both public school teachers.
I don't know why I'm talking Jew now.
It's all right.
I'm decided. I've shifted.
My dad was a teacher at Bushwick High when Bushwick was rough.
Educators. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And my mom taught fourth grade
on
Neck Road.
Did they encourage you to read? Was it an intellectual household? Was it progressive household? Was it a communist household? Was
no.
it a democratic household?
Democratic, I'd say.
Yeah.
You know, and definitely like you had to do your homework.
Uh-huh.
You know?
They were teachers.
I mean, they were teachers, exactly. So that was helpful, you know, because it made sure there was a seriousness about your homework. If you did your homework, you were fine.
But you were a good student.
I was a fine student.
But what were your interests at the time? Like, I mean, how do you end up?
I mean, you're talking about elementary school.
When you got old enough to have interests, what was driving you?
I was pretty well-rounded. I definitely was good in math and science, and I was leaning that way until I got to college. And my roommate in college freshman year was a math major, and his math book had no numbers in it. It was all like Greek symbols.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, that's not for me. And so I leaned into
What was that? What was it?
It was like sigmas and pies and all that stuff.
So
and
level shit?
It was high level
shit. What college was that?
At Harvard.
So you got into Harvard?
I did.
And what do you got to know when you get in there? Do you have to enter with some interest? I mean, what were you like?
I had no idea. I public school education, which is like, I barely knew how to write.
So then
the Mac came out with the first Mac, whatever they called it.
It wasn't the book. It was the 127.
Yeah.
The box.
And the spell check saved my, I didn't know how to spell there and there.
You got into Harvard.
Yeah, I didn't really know how to do that. So
you're there on the quad. You're there at Harvard. You're eating burgers at the Tasty. Did you eat there?
Of course.
Yeah.
That's good. Hey, you know, you're from Boston.
I lived in Somerville.
Oh, very nice.
I mean, I went to, after I went to college at Boston University, then I came out here for a year, and then I went back, and I started my comedy career in 88. So I was there on and off from 81 to 89, then I was going up there to work. So
that's great.
And I used to work at the Coffee Connection in the garage.
Very nice.
Sure. Before Starbucks.
Middle East. Ratskeller?
Ratskeller and Kenmore.
That was great.
That's all gone. Middle East is still there,
I think. The Channel. Remember the Channel?
Sure, Channel down in
the reggae place.
Well, yeah, they had a lot of different bands there. The
World
Channel
music,
down on the wharf.
Yeah, exactly.
Sure, I saw James Brown.
Which is all developed
there.
Now with like condos, right, or something? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I rarely go back. But so you're there. You're that. That's pretty rare air for a kid from Brooklyn.
Absolutely. It was weird. It was weird. I was a
long coats.
I didn't quite understand what was going on for a while.
And yeah,
it's just definitely like a deer in headlights. Just not. I just never had an experience like that up to that point.
With the aristocracy.
Yeah, I mean, there's all types of kids, to be
sure,
fair. But and you know, look, a lot of the people I still work with were college roommates. My writing and producing partner Ari, was a roommate. The guy who does my VFX was a roommate. So, you know, Sean Gillette, who starred in Pi, was a good friend. So, you know.
He was at Harvard?
Yeah. But that was what was great. You met a lot of people that.
But they didn't have a film program, did they?
Not barely. They had like 20 film students.
So did you graduate from Harvard?
Yeah.
So what'd you end up studying?
I graduated I basically became a film major, but I didn't graduate with a film degree because I was a little embarrassed to go back to the parents in Brooklyn and say I want an arts and crafts degree.
Yeah, at Harvard.
And you're paying this amount of money for me to go. So, you know, I just was too embarrassed. So I took all art class, like I took drawing, but I didn't really tell them. And it was the only place where I got good grades. The rest, I was a B-minus student. The only A I ever got was in film.
So what did you tell them you did? I mean, didn't they see the paperwork? Like, what did you get
into? No, they paid them. They were just glad I was getting through it. And,
you didn't placate them with, like, science or anything?
I didn't do much science, no. I don't think I did one science class that you had to take.
Yeah.
But even though I had a lot of science background.
What do you think ultimately? Because the Harvard education they do with, like, there's a core curriculum, right?
That
goes throughout the 4 years.
Yeah.
That you take to get the decent, well-rounded liberal arts education. This is before they sold it out.
But I'll tell you that.
You hear the cat? Hello? Buster?
Buster. Buster?
Buster. Fuck him. Yeah, go ahead.
The core was great. Yeah. Many of the things I learned in the core are things that have influenced me in my work.
For instance?
Well, there was a class on, they called it Heroes for Zeros, which was like basically... Joseph Campbell's
the mythology, the hero with a thousand faces,
which I took for an easy class, and I actually learned
that
structure.
I took
Bible first time, which was like you just read the Bible,
the hermeneutic code.
Yeah. Just different things have shown up in the work. So I think I actually, at the time, it was a pain in the ass, but I actually think it did
informed
what it did. It actually well rounded, gave me a lot.
Those
of
are the
ideas.
Ones, right?
Yeah, the weird
those
things.
Are the ones that are going to inform more than anything else.
Things that don't think you're interested in.
Yeah, the sort of never-ending story, the eternal narratives.
Yes.
That are told again and again and again.
So did Obama sit in this chair?
He sat right in that chair.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. You like it?
Love it. It's very comfy.
Good. So that's what did it, huh? And so, but the film class is available. So you're going to the Brattle Theater. You're seeing that
yes.
shit, right?
There was a. It was basically a documentary film department, and we did a lot of docs. But they gave you the cameras. You loaded the cameras. You cut the film on steam bags.
Oh, it was practical
old school
stuff, right?
Yeah, it was
okay.
old school. I still have scars from with the.
Oh, that's
with
interesting.
The
so they kept it.
They didn't keep it. It was pre-digital.
No, but right. But I mean, it was probably in the journalism department.
No, it was in the arts department. Okay. They had a nice arts department.
Why'd they decide on documentary if that's what they offered film-wise?
No, one of the big professors is a famous person in that world.
Who?
Ross McElvey. He did Sherman's March.
Sure, I remember Sherman's March.
So he's kind of the godfather of the department, and then these two guys at him at the time, Alfred Gazzetti and Rob Moss, kind of continued that.
So
tradition.
Doc is art.
Doc. Yeah, it wasn't as journalism. It was more as they were very much into the personal doc.
Right.
The doc where you're aware of the filmmaker, just like Michael Moore does now, and it's become very popular.
Sure.
The guy, who ate the hamburgers all the time.
Yes, Morgan Spurlock.
Yeah.
But Sherman's March was one of the first that did that.
Exactly.
I remember that movie.
Yeah, exactly.
And he did another one.
He's done a few.
Yeah.
He's very talented, but he's very referential to himself.
Sure. That makes it charming and funny.
Yeah, I guess so. And
I
also,
mean, some docs don't. You shouldn't do that.
Yeah.
You know, like the guy who made the one about Durst, the killer.
Oh, that was great.
It was great, but like I didn't need him in it.
He's a friend. But I thought he did a good, you know, yeah, it's true, but he
No,
was
he did
great.
A good job, he but every time job. He was in it, sort of like, I don't know.
great end, though.
Oh, yeah. No, that was great. I like good docs. I think he's good. I'm not sure.
But he also
did
Capturing the Freemans.
Which I liked a lot. And I like that better because that guy, the clown, the clown Freeman, he was around comedy a little bit. I mean, he was around.
I didn't know
a little bit.
Interesting. I didn't know he was part of the posse.
He wasn't part of the posse,
right?
But he was on the periphery. At
what? It wasn't called. What did you call it on Monday nights?
Eating it.
I don't remember that. I thought it was like a. I forgot.
Well, no, but there was another show at Surf Reality. There was another show at the Collective Unconscious. I mean, a lot of people didn't know that it was called Eating It.
Okay, maybe that's why.
You know, it was just Monday night at Luna's,
at
Luna Lounge.
I have such an image of you there on the mic.
Sweating.
Complaining.
Oh, yeah. See that? Now we're getting, that's why you didn't use me in the movies. This guy just complains. I don't know if, I don't think he can act. This guy's a complainer.
I got to know Todd, so that's why.
I love Todd. I do not begrudge Todd anything.
You know, I tried to put Attell in a movie too, who I love.
I love Attell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it didn't work at the time. Yeah.
All right. I think that's interesting to me that you learned the basics of film editing in this documentary class just because the equipment was there.
It was all there.
And it also, you know, you're not polluting your head with lofty visions of creative filmmakers. You're sort of on your own.
Yeah. And there was, at that time, there was no like path from an independent filmmaker to Spielberg or anything. Like, it didn't exist.
But what are you seeing that's making you compelled to do film? I mean, what turned you?
It was before Slacker, which I think was a big influence on me when that came out.
Or that you liked the movie?
I liked the movie, and also that it felt, you could feel the hand, you could see how it was made, sort of, because it worked, and it connected to a lot of people. But, you know, by the time I got to film school, like Il Mariachi was just getting made, and that was also another breakthrough.
Rodriguez and Linklater.
No, I think before that, though, it was, you know, in high school, I went to the movie theater in Brooklyn at King's Plaza. I don't know if you know King's Plaza in Canarsie.
Yeah.
And the movie I wanted to see was sold out, and there was a poster with a goofy-looking guy with a Brooklyn hat on it. I said, let's go see that, and it turns out it was She's Gotta Have It. And I had never seen anything like that.
Yeah.
I was just like, what the hell? I didn't know that something like that could exist. So
because you were used to mainstream movies.
Yeah,
right.
That's all I grew up with.
Yeah,
that's,
sure.
It's the, you know,
sure.
We're of this late 70s and 80s.
Yeah, right.
And that's, everything was those big, you know, early blockbusters. And so I saw that, and that sort of sent me, I discovered Jarmusch after that, and the kind of New York independent scene was like really exciting.
So that was when you were in high school?
I think, probably like end of high school, early college.
That's a good time for it.
Yeah, but I always had a taste for that. My taste was always slightly off.
But now when you... But like when you got into making film or when you were hanging around in Boston, did you pursue, you know, because like there's some elements of Mother that are specifically not American movies.
Yeah. Well, I definitely probably was influenced a lot by European and Asian masters.
Yeah. I mean, because there's a the narrative is broken up and a lot of it is insanely visual, but not visual in a way to distract or avoid.
Right. Well, I guess that's a compliment.
No, it is a compliment.
Oh, thank you.
No, I mean, you're utilizing, you know, film metaphor.
Yeah.
Very intentionally, which, you know, it's not spectacle in a way.
Yeah. Well, I like one of the great things of film is that it could become a dream.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to be in a world of superheroes. You don't have to be in a real world. You can sort of follow characters through subjective thought, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, as we're hanging out here, we're making some eye contact, but you're looking over there, you're thinking about Buster. There's lots of other things happening in our reality.
I'm pretty focused. I'm listening.
You are.
Yeah.
But that's interesting that you can show how people's attention drift. And cinema is the only kind of art form that can let you sort of follow a character through their kind of personal experience.
Yeah. So when you made Pi, what was your student film, though? Did you have to do a student film?
I did do a student film. It was called Supermarket Sweep.
Yeah.
Inspired by the TV show. Remember Supermarket Sweep?
Where you had to run in and buy?
Yeah.
You had a certain amount of time?
Which they bring him back.
Of course.
And you want to be my partner on the show?
Sure. Yeah. I don't remember how the partnership works. How does it work? One guy runs, the other guy...
grabs the turkeys or something.
Oh, okay. Yeah, sure. Yeah. That's what you're offering me? Yeah,
exactly.
After all these years?
Exactly.
I'm going to go on Supermarket Sweep with Darren Aronofsky as his partner.
It'll be a great team. Yeah, agreed.
Okay. I'm up for it. So you made that film.
It was kind of like a weird, it was with Sean, the guy who starred in Pi, and he sort of just goes on.
What's he up to? He's did a few other movies here and there.
Yeah, and then he directed a movie. He fell in love and married a girl from Morocco, lived in Tangier.
Oh, what? That's
and actually directed a film in Tangier, and now is trying to do his second film. So he's doing well.
That's exotic and exciting.
Very exciting. It was nice to go visit a good old friend living
in Morocco,
on the Mediterranean in Morocco.
It's it's like Bowles and Burroughs.
Very Burroughs. Like he, in fact, the first time I met Sean, he handed me a copy of Cities of the Red Knight, which
that's
is one of
great
Burroughs.
One. Great, it's the great. Pirate one.
Yeah, that, exactly. And I started reading. I was like, what the hell is going on? Still, I'm perplexed by it.
That's pretty perplexing. But that trilogy, I like a lot. That was The Western Lands, Place of Dead Roads, and City of the Red Knight. And the Place of Dead Roads is a Western.
Yeah.
And that one's pretty good.
Yeah.
It's easy to follow.
Yeah.
It's a Western. It's kind of a homoerotic Western with occasional aliens and space action. And a lot of talk of poisonous insects.
Cities of Red Knight, it was a detective? No.
No, was that Pirates, wasn't it?
It was Pirates. Right?
Yeah, and then Western Lands was the Book of the Dead. That was the Egyptian one.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's been a long time. But they were fun. Naked Lunch is clear.
He's funny. I mean, you know,
hilarious.
He had bits.
He had bits. It was sad to lose him.
Sure, but he lived a long time.
He did live a long time.
He did all right, Bill.
He did all right. He had a nice comeback.
Sure he did. I just picked up, I tracked down that documentary.
Oh, Buster.
Hey, Buster.
Oh.
It is Buster.
Wow, Buster. We found him.
Hey, buddy. Come here.
Oh.
Come here, buddy. Buster, come here.
Cats.
Come here, buddy.
You got him? That's good. I spotted him.
I'm about to cry. What a fucking asshole. That cat's an asshole. I'm about to cry. I tell you.
Beautiful cat. Small, though.
He's a very smart cat. And the thing is like, when they run off like that, there's nothing you can fucking do.
Yeah.
And he doesn't go, he's probably hiding for 2 days.
Right.
Anyway, so where were we? Oh, Burroughs. And then we went to, I tracked down that documentary. There's a documentary called Burroughs.
Oh, I haven't seen it.
It's sort of hard to find.
Okay.
And it's pretty great. I think I got it on the Criterion Collection. I remember seeing it at a screening in Boston, actually, in like the Copley, at the Copley Theater. Remember when they opened that complex down there?
I do.
So like, and I was like hung up on it. Who directed? Was it Kit Carson? I don't remember who. But anyway,
was footage of him later?
It was all throughout. Like it was a pretty thorough documentary.
Oh, great.
But I remember seeing him on SNL my freshman year of college and not knowing who the fuck he was. And I kept thinking, like, this is the guy that wrote Tarzan? Like,
that Burroughs.
Right. So I was just a dummy. And I had this little set, and he was reading from Naked Lunch, you know, Dr. Benway, Ship's Doctor. And I'm like, what the fuck? And it blew my mind. And that started a lot of everything. But, so the first film, Pi, I remember that was an exciting time. You were the new genius. You're the genius of the Lower East Side. This guy who made this movie for a little bit of money in black and white, and it's fucking trippy.
Yeah. Do you remember the tags, the graffiti we stuck up?
Yeah, I do remember. That, yeah. Of course, I was there.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, what the fuck is this pie business?
It was very cool. I hired a bunch of friends from Brooklyn.
To a street team?
I told them $25 a can. Just take the stencils and put it up everywhere. I had five guys one night, and we just bombed the city.
Well, why were you possessed with that story?
Pie?
Yeah.
I don't know. It was a lot of things I was thinking about at the time.
We're not brought up with a lot of religion.
No.
Okay.
But I actually had a math teacher in high school who taught all the sacred geometry. It was like an elective. Somehow I ended up in his class, and he told all these mystical things about pi and how the Egyptians had the ratio in their buildings, but then used a different.
Alongside of the Joseph Campbell stuff and the Bible stuff, you're like, this is the missing piece.
The mysticism. Yeah, it's all.
The mysticism. It's
all, I like that stuff because I think people get lost in it. And
yeah,
it
oh, yeah, you can
magic.
Lose your mind in it.
Yeah, it summons
and
magic.
That happened in the movie.
Exactly.
It's like, how far out can you drive your brain?
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. Which is fun.
But then, like, Requiem for a Dream was like, boom, we're in color. Yeah. We're moving the camera around. I'm a pro. Yeah. Look at this. Fuck you. Look what I can do.
And I got movie stars.
Yeah.
So, it was nice.
You got movie stars. And Marlon was good. That was the first time it was sort of like, this guy can act.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Surprised. I made him read like 3-4 times.
Yeah.
And I think before he came in to see me, he like stayed up for 2 days and, didn't shower or something. And,
oh, really?
And he came in just wiped out, and I thought he was great.
And was that Jared's first movie, Jared Leto?
No, he was already, don't you remember, he was a TV guy.
Oh, yeah.
He was on that.
It was a kid thing, right?
Yeah, but girls liked him. But I liked him. I thought he was great.
He's great. Yeah, and Burstyn was great. Burstyn and Jennifer, great. Like, was that, she's always good. And what was that black dude's name?
Oh, Keith David.
Yeah. That's heavy shit, man.
He was great.
Yeah. And Ellen Burstyn, fucking amazing.
Amazing. Kicked it.
Just
kicked
like, it. Jacked.
Jacked. Jacked. And just went for it. And it was an amazing thing to see her do. It's like, every take, she was just ripped. And
yeah.
It was great. It was great. And Cubby was, Hubert Selby Jr. was there while we were shooting it. And he's actually in the film. He's the prison guard.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I kind of remember that.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, and to have Cubby on set.
Amazing. Well, I'd have him read a section of the book before, like when it was an
intense. To the actors?
Yeah. Like before an actor would go, I have him do his like reading of the section. And then we'd be like, roll cameras. Okay, let's action. And it was just an intense moment. I remember doing that when Ellen was being electrocuted on during that scene.
It
was a really intense moment.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
What did he think? How was the experience for him?
It's funny. When he saw it the first time, he didn't really say much. But then at Cannes, when we premiered at the film festival, it was a reaction. I don't actually talk about it, but it was one of the great moments of my life.
Well, let's talk about it.
I can't. I don't talk. It's a thing.
Too special?
You know what?
Keep it personal?
When Cubby died, there was a memorial for him at the Egyptian on Hollywood Boulevard. And it's funny because everyone who spoke were people he helped with addiction.
Jerry Stahl?
A lot of guys were up there, and they all talked about it. And I remember my DP was there, Maddie, and I was like, I whispered to him, like, I'm not in recovery. What am I going to talk to him? I feel.
And he's like, meeting.
He's like, that's a good reason that you should talk.
Yeah.
Because, you got, he made your life in a different way.
Yeah.
So I went up there and I told that story and I said, this is the last time I'm going to tell this story. So I'm honoring that. But it was
out of respect for him?
I think it's also out of respect. No, I don't think it's that. Although I have tremendous respect for him. It's because I think.
You want to keep it private. Keep it personal.
I think if you tell stories too much,
yeah,
they don't become yours anymore, and you forget the truth of them. You start...
Well, that's interesting.
Every time you tell a story, you construct it.
As a public personality.
And you know that, sure. As a comedian.
But I know that from talking to celebrities. That's what I know it from.
Because they hone their material.
Of course.
Yeah. And
they hone their public narrative.
Of course. And I do it on a press tour when I'm talking about the film.
Sure. I know you said everything we've said tonight.
No. You've actually gone a lot because you're just very loose. But actually, I haven't actually had a chance to say anything. I haven't promoted Mother at all, but that's great. So certain stories I feel like you keep private because otherwise, even though they're amazing, they just lose their energy and they become something different.
That's
interesting. Further from the truth.
Well, that's interesting. As a guy that barters in stories.
Yeah. Well, here's a good one. Every time you tell a story, it becomes less true. How's that?
Is that yours?
I don't know, but I'll take it. It sounds familiar. But that's what I'm thinking right now.
It becomes less true because of what you're saying, you become more removed from the experience.
It's actually not mine. It's Laurie Anderson's from her film. The film she just... Did you see this film about her dog dying?
Oh, no. I haven't seen her in years.
She did a beautiful movie that's on HBO called Something of a Dog.
Uh-huh.
Can you look it up?
Oh, sure.
Just so we could give it a plug.
Yeah.
It was really nice and beautiful and very poetic. But I think that was...
Heart of a Dog?
Heart of a Dog. Thank you.
Oh.
Yeah. Well worth seeing.
Oh, it's new, huh?
Yeah, she did it maybe
98% Rotten Tomatoes.
There you go.
Wow.
Yeah, it's very beautiful. It's kind of about...
I always liked
her. It's her dog passing, but I think she's really talking about...
Lou.
Yeah, I imagine. You know,
He'd be honored.
He talks about being a dog several times in the songs.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but I like the idea that you know, it becomes less true only because you become less connected to it.
Yes. And also it abstracts because you start to
embellish,
exactly, bend it,
well, what do you,
the punchline.
But what do you think about memory in general? Is that something you fuck with?
You mean
actively? No, I mean that why we remember, how we remember. You know, is that something that interests you in the same way that math does?
I've got this memory I have that I remember I was very young and I was like, I know exactly where I was in the car. I know exactly what I was looking at. It was a traffic light blinking. And I said to myself, I'm going to remember this for the rest of my life. And it's funny, whenever I think about memory or someone starts talking about that, triggers. So it's weird what memory is and what you decide to, you know, what falls into the memory.
Yeah, and why you keep them.
Yeah, but I mean, I could remember you performing on the Lower East Side. And to be honest, besides Portnoy, you might be the only one I remember.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
That stuck, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess there's an intensity, there are frequencies, you know? Like, my girlfriend asked me the other night, like, you know, what's your earliest memory? And I kind of remember going to my grandparents' house when they lived in Jersey City, where my father grew up.
Yeah.
I remember driving into the city from Bayonne, you know, with my grandfather to get tongue at Katz's.
Are you from Bayonne?
No.
Oh.
My family's from Jersey, but my father's parents lived in Jersey City when he was younger. Then they moved to Bayonne. They eventually moved to Asbury Park.
Right.
But I was very young.
Yeah.
But I remember living in Wayne, New Jersey, and getting hit in the eye with a can. I don't know. Like, there are bits and pieces of memory.
Do you still have guy friends from back then?
From when I was
childhood.
That young?
Yeah.
Oh, no. From New Mexico, from third grade, from Hebrew school. I got some, like, a couple of cats I know from Hebrew school. There's one guy that I keep in touch with that I've known since third grade.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. It's odd.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a whole posse of guys from Manhattan Beach that... There's like six of us. We get together all the time.
Yeah.
And we met on tricycles.
It's so nice. Cool. It's nice.
They keep you grounded.
Yeah, they do. And I don't have enough of them.
Yeah.
You know, and I've lived a lot of different places.
Yeah.
You know, that's the weird thing about
I'm kind of old school with you.
Yeah, definitely. You are. Yeah, but like New York was just a period. There was a Boston period.
Yeah.
You had a Boston period, but I was up there older, you know, older. There was a San Francisco period. There was two LA periods.
Wow.
A lot of different places.
Yeah, yeah.
But all right, so I'm going to skip the two movies I didn't see, and let's just talk about the Wrestler.
You saw The Wrestler.
I did, of course, many times. And I watch it again and again, and I go like, really? Like Todd and Judah? But But they were both great.
Yeah, they
were both great. Mickey was great.
I don't know if Judah minded. I cut off his head in the first scene, but it was on purpose.
You did.
It was about to make. It was about making it about the ram, you know. And I purposely did that, which is rude, but it was.
Well, like, you know, I'm on a wrestling show now.
Are
like,
you
on Netflix? I'm on Glow, the gorgeous
which I've seen the whole season. It's a great show. I really enjoyed it.
It's fun, right?
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
in deep in its own way.
Very meaningful, very sad, very, your character is very, it's great. Your character's hilarious, and you're great, convincing, because a lot of comedians can't make that step, I find.
Yeah.
But, because I think certain comedy is just, it's, it, you just have to, you're delivering, you're a speech maker, you're an orator, orator,
Orator,
You know, but acting has twists and turns, and you have to find quiet, you have to find loud, different voices, I think.
No, I think you're right, and you got to be open.
Yes.
Well, I appreciate that. But so what, you know, to do the actor.
You were saying the wrestlers. Yeah.
You know, to be, you know, but I've talked to a lot of wrestlers.
Yeah.
You know, over time on this show.
Yeah.
And I've grown to appreciate wrestlers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
As an entertainment and as a physically draining and, you know, insane skill. But I watched A Wrestler again recently.
Thank you.
And I love it. And I just like, why that movie though? Like, what was it that compelled you towards that?
When I was 13, I got into...
You're a wrestling kid?
Yeah, for a year. It was like
a year.
Hulk Hogan was a bad guy. Yeah. Balaban, what was not Balaban? That's not Bob Bob Backlund.
I'd love to see Bob Balaban.
Exactly.
That would be amazing. It would
be great. Anyway, I can't remember the names of all the wrestlers back then, but the Samoans, all that shit.
Yeah.
So I loved it and for a year. And I always thought, there's got to be a world there. There's been a million boxing movies.
Yeah.
And there hasn't been a serious wrestling movie ever.
Yeah.
And there has to be a world there because there's so many people that give their lives to it. So for a long time, I had this project in my notes about doing something on a wrestler. And then eventually I started to meet some of the old guys that I grew up, you know, idolizing, you know, Lou Albano I met and, I can't remember their names. I'm spacing right now, but
Mick Foley.
I did talk to Mick, but I never met Jake, but Mick Foley was later.
Yeah.
You know, but he was interesting because he's all about the pain and doing crazy shit to his body.
Oh, yeah. And he can barely walk now.
Barely. I lived one flight up and getting him up that flight of steps to my
Sweet
house.
Guy.
Very nice guy. Very nice guy.
Yeah.
But messed up and brilliant. Really smart guy.
Well, it seems like, you know, that there was a little bit of like that spirit in that guy that Mickey O'Rourke fights at the end.
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No. You're talking about halfway through the guy with the staple gun?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that was a real wrestling promotion. I mean, the idea was always to stick Mickey Rourke into real wrestling situations with real wrestlers and let the fun begin.
Yeah.
And so that there was this super hardcore wrestling that was all about blood and bleeding and you know, kind of torture.
It's real.
Totally,
it's
real. I mean,
its own circuit.
The audience knows it's fake, but they know the pain is real,
right?
So they are, you know, when the guy jumps off a super high ladder, they start chanting, "You're so dead, you're so dead."
Yeah,
and that just, I saw this event.
So the blood and guts stuff.
The blood and guts, and I was just, this is a world. This is a world.
Oh, so that drew you in because I remember like those wrestling magazines when I was a kid. I didn't go in for wrestling, but they were always just guys in unitards with blood all over.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And we used to love it when they would bleed. That was like the thing for some reason.
But it was real blood, no?
Yeah, they basically take a little piece of razor blade, like we show the whole thing.
Oh, yeah, that's right, that's right.
And they take an aspirin beforehand so that they're
thin
the blood out, and then all they do is a little slice, little tiny razor slice, and they get it in the sweat and the blood, and after a few seconds of it, it's just pouring out of them.
Yeah, and that's the entertainment.
I guess it's somehow like, it's like people sort of in the back of their heads knew it was violent, but then when you see blood, how could that be fake? You know, I think it's part of the magic trick.
That's right. Spectacle of it.
Yeah.
And the awareness of that. Now, was that before Beyond the Mat? Did you see Beyond the Mat about Jake the Snake? I think it came out later. Barry, documentary?
I think it was simultaneous we were doing it. And I think elements of Jake's, you know, in that documentary came through a little bit.
Uh-huh. But like, it's brutal, man. The drugs, the you know, what they put them through. And the fact that there are these circuits, that not unlike comedy, where you're playing B rooms.
Yeah.
You're literally, you know, trying to make a little bit of the door, a little bit of cut.
A lot of these guys do it just like comedians do.
Stay alive.
Not just that, but they'll go and do an empty room just to, you know.
To get up and do it.
Just to get up and do it.
Oh, my God.
But these guys are not just hurting their vocal cords. They're actually doing physical shit that hurts.
I know it was, and he was genius.
He did a great job. Well, Mickey's always been genius.
Yeah,
it was just about capturing him in the right
at that
role.
Time. What was he like about it? What was your relationship with him?
I think he looked at me like medicine. He knew I tasted bad, but he knew it was good for him. You know, it was that type of thing. Like every time he'd be like, "All right, what do you want now?" But he knew we were doing something special, and he was very much like an old biplane. To get the propeller going, you had to keep. And then as soon as it started purring, it was just beautiful. It's just like, you know, like a Rolls Royce engine. It just took a while to get going.
Yeah, Mickey Rourke, the old biplane.
Yeah.
And then you go from that to Black Swan, which is about another physically taxing, kind of brutally, you know, harsh and sad on different levels.
Yeah.
And so meticulous. You're very meticulous. Everything was very refined. The comparison of the two, which are somewhat similar in the intensity of how hard they are on themselves.
Yeah, the body as art.
Right, but yet, you know, just the mess of wrestling compared to the anal control freakishness
of ballet. Yeah.
High art and low art, but I guess that's been said before.
Yeah.
So that's a good double feature.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
But like what, in Black Swan, what drew you into that world? I mean, you knew that was a world.
Yes.
How you handled it.
My sister was a dancer when I was a kid, but you know, I was into Little League. But she had the posters, and she was a serious ballerina all the way through high school.
Yeah.
And so I thought that there was a world there. And once again, I was like, very similar to wrestling. I was like, there's something there. People love it. It's been going on for a very long time.
Yeah, and all the little girls. There's like, isn't there like anorexia there and just like
there's so much stuff. There's so much stuff to get, you know, that's really tough.
And you got a lot of it.
We tried to touch a bunch.
Yeah. And she won the Oscar, right?
She did.
That was exciting.
Definitely. It was a good
time. Have you won an Oscar?
I've been nominated.
For which one?
Black Swan.
Oh, damn, man.
Yeah.
Is that something that's important to you?
I mean, it's funny. I remember as it was happening, the whole thing, you realize it's a golden statue. It's like a golden man.
You want the prize, though, you know?
Look, it helps the work. Awards help the work. And so it makes sense, especially when you do weird films, to get it's amazing. It's great. And I mean, look, I've won big awards, so, you know, and it's the wrestler won the Venice Film Festival, and it was an amazing thing for the film because it really got it going, and people started we were really nothing when we went to the Venice Film Festival.
Yeah.
We were the last film, and we weren't even the closing night film. Even though we were the last film, they didn't give us the slot of closing night. We were just the last film.
Right.
And then we got that big prize, and that really helped us sell it. And then it propelled it all the way to the Globes and to the Oscars and all that stuff. So, and that just raises the awareness because there's so many articles written about it for that reason. So that's what's important. I think though, those prizes can screw you up. And the important thing, you know,
I guess
and,
so.
And the important thing is to stay grounded and remember you gotta work hard.
But you're one of those guys, though. You mix it up. You know what I mean? You know, you do a lot of different kinds of movies.
Do I?
I think so.
Some people say it's all the same movie.
What? Really?
I've gotten that.
I don't know. You can tell me Noah and The Wrestler are the same movie.
I agree.
You can tell me Black Swan and Mother are the same movie.
No.
You can tell me that? You can tell me that, Darren? You can look me in the eye. You can say that to me.
Oh.
No, but like, what's your relationship like? Because I see that you do a lot of producing, and that's a whole other world.
Yeah.
How do you approach that? How did you get involved with The Fighter, for instance? I don't know why I want to talk about David O. Russell, but you guys are friends, or are you not friends?
Well, just recently, we become much closer because he really supported Mother. He really dug it. And
it seems really he's another guy that does a lot of odd movies.
Definitely. And I when he did Spanking the Monkey and I was a student, that was one of the films that I was like, oh, this is great. And it was very inspiring. And to see his career, how he did it was great.
I've never seen that. Fuck that guy. You know, how that unfolded was unbelievable.
Which one?
Spanking the Monkey.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, oh, that could happen.
Yeah. And then the other one with Ben Stiller and the
LSD. Oh, yeah, Disaster Forty.
Yeah, yeah, that was great.
Great ensemble comedy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then Huckabee's, it's like, what?
Yeah. I like it.
Yeah, me too. I love it.
Wacky, you know?
It's like an Ionesco play, complete absurdity. Yeah,
it was great. And so, I don't know.
But how'd you get involved with The Fighter?
I actually was on it before him. Yeah. And I brought on the writer, and I think I brought on Christian Bell, and I think Mark Wahlberg.
It was your idea?
No. It was an idea brought to me.
You were going
to
direct it.
Yeah, and I was developing it.
Oh, I get it.
And then I had just finished The Wrestler, and I was kind of sick of the smell of Bengay. You know, I was like,
enough fighting.
I got to go to ballet.
Yeah.
I'd rather, you know.
Smell powder?
Smell something different.
Yeah.
Because like.
Chalk.
It was a lot of sweaty, sweaty locker rooms when I did The Wrestler.
How'd you feel like he did with the movie?
I thought it was great.
It was great, right?
I think he brought a humor to it that I never saw, you know, and he had his wacky
interesting
kind of, you know, thing that I wasn't thinking about. I think I was looking at a sports drama. I mean, Breaking Away is one of my favorite films, you know, the bike movie.
Sure.
And I love that genre. I love, you know.
Oh, when Dennis Quaid can't breathe anymore.
It's great.
Yeah.
It's great. Great. And the kid goes across the... I just watched it a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, no kidding.
Still cry when he crosses the finish line.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
And, you know, Rudy, another great one.
So, but as a producer, like Jackie, too, that seems like a movie that you could have made as well.
I was going to do it for a while, too. That's why I had it. I got it.
So that's how these producer things happened, that you were attached.
Not all of them, but some of them, yeah. Sometimes we develop a project and I kind of don't feel it enough. And then I was lucky to find Pablo Larraín, who did Jackie and did a beautiful job.
How'd you feel about it? Oh, you liked it?
I thought it was great.
I did too.
It was great.
I just talked to Greta Gerwig today.
Oh, great. She signed this show?
Yeah, a few hours ago.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah, it's been a big day. So now, is there anything I can do for you? Do you feel like this conversation went well? Are you disappointed in any way?
Well, what you could do.
I'm going to watch the rest of the
movie. You could pause it. You could watch the movie. And then you could add to the end of this, even though I'm not here. And then just say what you think about it. And then I could hear it when I listen to it.
How's that?
Is that a deal?
That's a
deal.
That
means you actually have to watch the end of it.
No, I'm going to. And here's the other.
I promise you, it's the best thing I've ever done.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, see, now I just feel awful because I tried, man. I tried to get it done.
I know. No, you're a busy guy.
I tried to get it done. I just got a link, and then the link didn't work.
Okay.
And then I had to get another link at 12:30 this afternoon.
No worries.
And then Greta came over, I'm watching it in the house, and then I'm worried about other shit.
The
cat was missing. Okay, but I'll do that for you.
That's good. I'll
honor that. I'll say goodbye to you.
Okay.
And then in this place. I'm telling my producer, I will talk about the end
of
Mother.
Okay, good. And then I'll listen and we'll see if
I get it. You gave me insight, and you didn't spoil anything for anybody.
No, exactly.
Because there was always the outside chance that if I did watch it, this is how I'm going to get wheeze and worm out of this.
Yeah,
if I had watched it.
It's not working.
We might have ruined it.
Mark, pleasure.
Nice seeing you. Nice talking to you.
Absolutely.
Okay, that was me and Darren Aronofsky, and I have to admit, in the name of transparency, I have to admit, I promised him I'd watch the end. I did not watch it. I don't know if it was, you know, subconsciously because I just didn't think I could handle it. I didn't know whether or not in my mind that I had seen enough. Maybe I'm afraid of it. Maybe I just forgot. Maybe I just forgot to watch it. Maybe maybe the allegory was too much for me already. Maybe reality in my life is intense enough to where the constant onslaught of what was happening in that film it was too much for me. But either way, I still like as much as I watched, and I will watch the rest later. I swear I will. I've been busy, and it's a lot. It's a lot, right? And I don't know what my life will be like if I watch the end of that movie. It could change everything. It could change everything. Movies have that kind of power, you know. Never look at anything the same way. Maybe that's what I'm afraid of. Maybe that's it. Maybe it's so deep and so good and so confrontational that I'm afraid of changing my life forever. And I will confront that fear. I will, Darren, if you're listening still. I will. I will confront that fear. But that's where I'm at with it. It's like my Everest. You know what? Let's spin it like this. This is the best of all possible situations because there's no fucking spoilers. because I didn't see the end of the movie. Yeah, that's how I'm going to do it. I didn't watch the end on purpose because I didn't want to even be tempted to spoil the movie for you. Although it does seem like one of those kind of movies where there are no spoilers because it's hard to wrap your brain around to begin with. But no spoilers. That was my choice. Gratitude, man. Gratitude and fear. Everything's mixed. There's always a blend. Always a blend. It's never so clear. It's never so one thing. It's always a little bit of a mix going on. I'm going to play a little guitar and get out of here. Boomer lives. Hey, folks, this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. You know all those times you've heard guests sneeze on the show? Well, actually, you don't hear any of that because we cut the sneezes out when we're editing. But take my word for it, people definitely sneeze in here, and when they do, I've got a box of Kleenex on the table right in front of them so they can use one and get right back to business. And here's what Kleenex means to me: a tissue that will hold up. We've all used those other tissues that you blow holes right through. When I see Kleenex, I know that tissue is up for the job. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.